it's a place where when you go in there, it just has this like aura and this awe about it that is just like it's just something that can't be described fully, that really has to be experienced. But you can still find, you know, I found a rock blind, an old rock blind that you are not entirely common, but not uncommon in the Middle Fork, that were built by the sheep eater Indians they used to hunt hunt sheep out of. And it was this cool, really cool moment where I found this old, the remnant of this old, like, horseshoe-shaped rock blind. And it was in this perfect spot to hunt, if you're trying to ambush hunt animals that were coming across. And it was, yeah, anyway, it was a really special moment where I was able to sort of connect with them.
Welcome back to the Byland Podcast. This is episode 60, but it is the very first episode of 2019. So, welcome to the new year. I hope that this year serves you well, and I hope you learned a ton in 2018, and you take that knowledge forward with you into this year and your adventures. And I would encourage you to just build on the adventures and the outings that you went on in 2018. And if you did two outings, then you should do three outings. If you did five outings, you should do maybe seven outings or something. If you did no outings at all, do one and build on that each and every year. I promise you'll get better at it. And you're going to be like my guest today, Brad Brooks from Algalley Outdoors, who ventures now into pretty wild places and films and helps people just learn about wild places, helps them save them, and helps them find the gear that they need, learn from his mistakes and his triumphs. And that's what we talk about today on this episode. Specifically, we explore the question of why go to the length and the effort and the pain to explore these wild places, save these wild places, and showcase them in a film or photo and document them. And we also kind of get into, you know, why these places are so special. And at the end of the episode, I ask Brad a question that I've never asked anyone ever in my entire life, and I thought of it on the fly, and it was kind of like a what would Teddy do, or think, Teddy Roosevelt being the, you know, father of national parks. So we kind of deep dive that topic as well. So yeah, if you're into just hearing a conversation between two guys talking about this idea of why we venture into these wild places and why it's important to save them, you're going to love this episode, and you're going to love how Brad approaches his work and what all this means to him. So please enjoy this episode with Brad Brooks of Algalley Outdoors. We'll see you on the other side. Brad, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, man. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I'm super pumped to talk with you today about just this general idea of kind of just, I guess, exploring. I don't really know the exact topic, but it's the idea of just exploring these wild places and saving them and kind of going through this idea of going through the effort, like the lengths that people go to and why we do it, to explore and talk about it, film it, and then live in it, and then kind of go to the next spot and share our experiences. So yeah, I'm really pumped to have that chat with you, man.
Yeah, man. Talk about whatever you want.
All right. So let's do a quick introduction to you. Do you want to do a short kind of spiel on yourself and
sure,
like where you're from and what you do?
Yeah, man. So Brad Brooks from Boise, Idaho. I own a company called Argali. We're a hunting gear and equipment company and a filmmaking company. I also work for the Wilderness Society and run our public lands campaign program. So yeah, kind of involved in public lands issues and hunting media a little bit.
Sweet. You recently, I don't know, when was the Frank Church film put out?
So we put out, so the Hunting Last Wild Places, the Frank.
That one, yeah.
Our most recent film. Yeah, we released it on end of October.
Okay.
Yeah, so just recently here.
So that film got, I guess that's the reason why we're talking today. I watched the film. The Frank Church Wilderness looks incredible. It's very remote from what I understand. And at the end of the film, I kind of had this thought of like, man, people go to some great lengths to showcase these wild places. And then I shot you a note on Instagram. I was like, dude, I really enjoyed it. And then you're planning on doing more things like this. And, you know, if you look back in your kind of backlog on YouTube and stuff, you've been filming a lot of things showcasing wilderness areas that are very near and dear to you. But it just kind of got me thinking about this idea of why the heck do we even, I guess, why do we care about saving these places? And I know that's kind of a weird topic to talk about on this show, but I think it's pretty relevant because I think for everyone it's kind of different. So where are you at on that?
So let me just back up by saying, like, because I think this is relevant, like why we started, my business partner Jason and I, like why we started our Argali. And, you know, we wanted originally, so we were a filmmaking company when we started, and I was really interested in telling stories about places and what was important and impactful in my life and what I love about hunting. And I think if you're a hunter, you have a connection to a place. And I think hunters, and I don't mean that only hunters have a connection to a place, but every hunter has a place. If you say, picture your favorite spot to hunt, they immediately have like a favorite mountain, a favorite marsh, a favorite, you know, whitetail spot they grew up hunting as a kid. And maybe that connection is because their dad or their mom took them there, or their uncle, or they whatever, shot a big buck in this one spot. But undoubtedly, if you ask hunters that question, they have a very quick, immediate visceral response. And I think it just has something to do with the nature of hunting. And I could say for me, place has always been important to hunting. And in particular, like wild remote places were very like instrumental in just helping shape who I am and what I care about. And so we started our Argali wanting to tell the story of these places and help tell stories about those places that are both interesting and different than kind of standard hunting media. Right. And that's a whole separate topic, that I have strong opinions on that we can talk about if you want. But in the genre of hunting media, I feel like, the general, I would say, like, not to a non-hunter, hunting is a very different thing than how hunters view their activity. And we wanted to like broaden sort of the understanding and value of hunting to folks that may not get it or may think that the only reason you go hunting is to, you know, take the hide or the horns. It's not about this sort of like lifestyle. It's not about sort of the spiritual experience. It's not about, you know, connecting with food and with the land and all these things that I care about and that pretty much every hunter I've ever known cares about, but that we do a very poor job sort of portraying to the rest of the world. So that was, you know, very front of mind when we started our Argali, and it occurred. So we always think of when we look at projects, we try and think of, you know, what are stories that we can tell that are sort of putting that are promoting the things that we care about and that are helping connect people to the backcountry in some way. So the idea for telling story about the last wild places evolved from a conversation that we had just internally about, you know, it's interesting if you think about the American West. At one point in time in like the Jeremiah Johnson era, one of my favorite films. If you haven't seen the Robert Redford film, you're really missing out. But in that era, it was, you know, basically you had Native Americans who had lived here for a long time, but it was really one vast wilderness And over a relatively short amount of time, we have whittled away at that once vast wilderness. We have dissected it with cities, with roads, all sorts of different things. And now what we have is wild places are really, they're the scraps and the remnants of this once vast wilderness landscape. And, you know, I live in a city. I'm not making a value judgment about that, but it's just, that's just the reality of it, right? We had this giant place. Now we have these small little island areas. And I wanted to tell kind of a story about why those places, those remaining, you know, whether you're talking about federally, congressionally designated wilderness or small W, just wild places. I wanted to tell, we wanted to tell stories about those places and like why those wild places that we have are worth having, because that's a very, that's an ongoing like cultural debate. And I feel fairly strongly that it's important to have those places for a variety of reasons. To, you know, they're, I'm going to take the Frank Church Wilderness, for example. So if folks aren't familiar with the Frank Church Wilderness, it's a very large wilderness area in central Idaho, over 2 million acres. When you combine it with the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, which is a contiguous, it forms this one large contiguous wilderness. It's the largest contiguous in the lower 48. It's very big, remote, it's rugged, it's wild. And it creates a very unique user experience. And by unique, I mean, it's not catered, you know, you're not going to have really well-maintained trails throughout the entire thing. You know, it's, you know, you're not going to see a lot of people most of the time in the Frank Church. And so we wanted to just, and just being from Idaho, and knowing a little bit of the history of how that place was protected and, you know, we just thought it was a really cool story. And I just to like get back to your original question about why go to the trouble. I'm not sure I can answer that in a way that's like compelling, other than to say it is a giant pain in the ass to make a film in the wilderness in the wintertime, which we did. But it's fun, man. And it's fun. And it also like, I enjoy, it's a lot of logistics and it's complex, but if we can, if it, you know, I wanted, I, my hope with making that film was that somebody could watch it and their takeaway wouldn't be, oh man, like, can you believe how big that buck was that that guy shot? But their takeaway would be, wow, what an amazing landscape. I would like to visit it. And I'm curious about this idea of wilderness. And hopefully it helps people understand and appreciate wilderness. You know, the value of wilderness to hunters and why it's worth having these places, because there are constant pressures to undo wilderness areas, or, you know, there's a million reasons why we shouldn't have wilderness areas, or just wild landscapes. But, I think for most folks, if you've never been inside a wilderness area, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So hopefully it can be used as a way to help, you know, educate folks and,
Well, I don't think
long-winded answer. No, to your original question there.
Long-winded answers are the best on the podcast. well, I don't think, to your point on like, I don't know if I can give you like a compelling, definitive answer. I think that for everyone, I don't think anyone would have that compelling, definitive answer to why it's worth it to go through all this trouble to showcase this these places, because everyone, it's more of a talking point, I guess. It's like, and it's probably something that evolves over time, because as you make memories out in these places, well, now you have a new reason. Like, if someone, like, I, when you, there's a, been a couple of things you said that have like registered with me. You mentioned every hunter has a place that they are just in love with, like their favorite place. For me, I even have a tattoo of Mount St. Helens on the inside of my arm, like the topple map of, right? Like Mount St. Helens to me, for some reason, this mountain draws me in. And I don't know why, but I've spent a lot of time, and the more memories that I make up there, every year I do this long trail around it. And I now it's like these little memory waypoints, right? Where I've dropped these memory pins and I walk past them, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. but they're there. Yeah. And if someone were to take that place away from me and say, and drop a house or a thing on it, dude, honestly, that turns my stomach inside out.
Yeah.
Like that. So what's the answer to the question? I don't know, but it's a preservation of like, I would be very sad if, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably move on. But I mean, I would be very upset if someone took those memory waypoints away from me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to add on to that, it's like, for me, if hunting for me, like if the options for me were to, if I didn't have places that were remote to go hunting in, I don't know what kind of hunting I would do, if I would really love it as much as I do and be as passionate as I am about it, because so much of what I love about hunting is just like being immersed in these landscapes. And, you know, in a place like the Frank, you know, it's one of these few places where almost all of the large predator, you know, carnivores and ungulate species that were there long time ago are still there, minus the grizzly bear. Mm-hmm. The grizzly bear is, I'm not sure if it'll ever come back. There are people who think that the biologists said they will be back in the Frank in short order, from Montana. But, you know, you still have, it just has a sense of wildness. I mean, mm-hmm. you're going to see wolves, wolf tracks. You're going to hear wolves while you're in there. And regardless of how you feel about that, those two species, I mean, mm-hmm. I like the fact that they're around. There's just something about hearing a wolf howl that is cool. And, so anyways, you know, having those places where you could have that experience is just incredibly important. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for people, but, it's also important for hunters to be able to connect with our past. Mm-hmm. And there is a cultural element here too, where it's like, you know, surviving in these places was a part of our culture for so long. We live these like insulated lives. We live in, suburban neighborhoods. We have warm homes with furnaces and, you know, just these very like safe lives. And I just feel like it's kind of a tragedy if there can't be some danger left in the world. And, yeah. I really do, man. It's like how else do you know, like, A, what you're made of, what you can do. Mm. I'm a parent, and this is probably not advice I'd give to my kid, but I really do believe it's like danger, a little bit of danger in your life is probably a good thing.
That's so funny. That's funny to say. Well, so I just became a father for the first time in September. And so now I have all these thoughts, just like what you said, like, I don't want my little girl to be in trouble, but there's this other part of my brain that's like, but I kind of hope she gets to struggle one day or have those like, I don't know how it's, honestly, I don't even know how to verbalize it just yet, but like, well, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Like getting lost in the woods, but you know, and making it out, but getting lost is like, it's a great experience. Mm-hmm. Like everybody should get lost, be like truly lost at one point in your life. Cause you guarantee you get lost once, you do not go back out there without a headlamp, some food, some water, and some minimal gear. If you don't ever get lost, you likely are not going to worry about those kinds of things. You get lost once, you learn, and
never
you
again.
Get genuinely scared, you will learn. Yeah, exactly. Never do that again.
That's fascinating.
Anyway, so like that, you know, the other thing too, man, I'll just say about the Frank is like, the middle fork of the Salmon River, which goes through the Frank Church Wilderness, it's one of the most iconic river floats in the country. You know, thousands of people float that river in the summertime. It's a coveted river to float because you know you can go like a week without seeing anybody. It also has, there's just a really interesting history of that place. There was, and just like on a historical note, one of the things that like interested me in this place in particular was the fact that, historically, you know, like bighorn sheep were the most populous big game species in the state. There was a native tribe, you know, that was commonly referred to as the sheep eater Indians. And this was a part of their like ancestral homeland. And, you know, so bighorn sheep were, are definitely not doing as well as they once were. But in this, in the Middle Fork, the last, I don't know why this was like fascinating from a story angle for me, but it was, and we didn't really work into the film, but, it's an important part of the history of this landscape too, is that the last Indian war in America was fought in the Middle Fork of the Salmon Country. And it was the last refuge. So the native, so there was a mishmash of different tribes, folks from different tribes who sought refuge in the Frank Church Wilderness, what is now the Frank Church Wilderness. To sort of like, they didn't want to, there was the holdouts that were, did not want to go be put on reservations, right? Understandably so. And they went to the Middle Fork because it was the most rugged country they knew of, and it was so hard to get in and out of. They thought that they could be safe by hiding out in there. And they did for a while. And then eventually the U.S. Cavalry sent in a bunch of folks to try and round up, you know, the 50 to 100 Native folks that were living in the Frank Church Wilderness. And one of this guy, Captain Bernard, led this brigade of troops through the Middle Fork country. This is a guy who had, you know, ventured all over the country, doing whatever the U.S. Cavalry in the late 1800s wanted him to do. And he wrote, after spending 3 months unsuccessfully looking for Native Americans in there, that it was, he has this quote in his journal. He said, "It's probably the roughest country I've ever experienced, and probably the roughest in America." And, and he's right. You know, if you ever spend any time in the Middle Fork, it is just brutally rough terrain, cliffy, you know, nasty, steep, just like deadfall everywhere. But it's, yeah, anyways, it's rough terrain, it's a super fascinating history. That was a part of the story, you know, telling a story about a place, because every place has a story to it. So.
I was thinking as you were finishing up, is like, by preserving these places, you're also preserving those memories as they, even if you don't know the details, it's easier to find the details when the thing still exists in its natural state versus if there is a road system going through it.
Yeah. So like, yeah. And the thing that's interesting to me about the, yeah, totally. By preserving, so by the Frank Church Wilderness was, you know, like getting that place designated is a whole other like history and long, long discussion in itself. But in making the film, like I read as much as I could about Senator Frank Church, about what happened to, you know, protect that place, about the history of it. And I think, you know, I would argue that by protecting it, not only are you protecting sort of the history of that place, it's a place where when you go in there, it just has this like aura and this awe about it that is just like, it's just something that can't be described fully, that really has to be experienced. But you can still find, you know, I found a rock blind, an old rock blind that you are not entirely common, but not uncommon in the Middle Fork, that were built by the sheep eater Indians. They used to hunt, hunt sheep out of. And it was this cool, really cool moment where I found this old, the remnant of this old like horseshoe shaped rock blind. And it was in this perfect spot to hunt, if you're trying to ambush hunt animals that were coming across. And it was, yeah, anyway, there's a really special moment where I was able to sort of connect with, I'm like, here I am, you know, with modern gear, all this fancy gun, fancy clothes, lightweight everything, right? Leather boots. And, you know, these folks were in here, you know, for thousands of years with incredibly simple tools, living here year round, probably a lot more successful at hunting than I am.
Did you, so, what'd you there do is like, when you saw it, what'd you do in there? Did you sit in it for a while?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I sat in it and I was like, and just sort of like tried to take in the surroundings and think about what it would have been like to hunt out of it. And it was, I mean, if I were to put up a blind it would be right where I would put up a blind, because it was situated above the river on a bench, and there was a game trail below us. Even to this day, there was a game trail. And I got to think that, like, it's just the terrain features and the topography. Like, I could totally see game, you know, crossing in front of that spot. You had a cliff on your back. You could see both sides. There was, you know, a water source to your left. Like, it was just in this great spot where it's like, I can imagine, I just, like, wondered, like, how many animals were killed here. So, yeah, it was really kind of interesting moment on the trip. We I didn't end up being able to kind of put that in the film during the edit, but yeah, cool experience.
Yeah, well, I have a thing for like old buildings. Like, I went to Europe. I've been to Europe a couple times, and it's so weird. You go up to like an old church or something, or a castle, and I'll just like sit there on a wall, or I'll like, I don't know, I just have this thing for like touching like these old things that people have built like hundreds and hundreds of years ago, or even thousands or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I can't imagine how, and I think that, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm having a connection. Like, I'm looking at the surroundings much like you did. But when, as you're talking, I'm like, you're identifying, like, you have a direct connection with that individual or those individuals that built that blind, and you're seeing exactly what they see. And you know why you're seeing it. And you understand each other in that moment.
Yeah.
From like possibly 1,000 years apart.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why that personally for me, it's hard for me to like put words around why that kind of that experience is so moving. But of all the things I do in life, like hunting is one where there's just this long cultural tradition that you feel like you're participating in. And, you know, for that like brief moment, it was like stumbling upon like, you know, Atlantis, you know, this lost thing that nobody else has seen, you know, for however long. It was just like, holy, you know, holy hell, like other people in my tribe, and I'm not speaking literally, but have like hunted right here, you know, humans have hunted here, and here I am, you know, however long later, doing the same thing. And yeah, anyway, it was just kind of this special moment. I think it was just funny too, man, like reading some of the diaries of the cavalry folks that were in there. They were they sort of like casually talked about some of the what it was like, you know, tromping through that ground. And one of the things that's interesting, there were, you know, at that point in time, there were still strong salmon runs in Idaho and the Middle Fork. And if you look at a map and you sort of map where the ocean is and how the river system, you know, the Columbia into the Snake and the Clearwater, and it comes all the way up, the salmon is all the way up in the Middle Fork. It's a long ways. And there are some passages in these guys' journals where it's like, you know, Cross Creek shot, you know, 5 salmon in the head, you know, each 40 or 50 pounds each. It was good, you know, very like to the point, but it's like, they were still running into like these really big king salmon way back in the Idaho backcountry. And they were shooting deer too. Like, you know, another passage was like, one guy was like casually mentioned how he's like, you know, they were shooting deer all the time, but he's like, at one point he's like, shot a nice buck today, 12 points on either side. And, you know, it's like, he's probably shot some like gigantic, you know, 220, 240 inch buck. But it was very like casual to them to like reference the game that were in there at that point in time. And the cool thing about the Frank though is because it's so big, it still has, you still have the opportunity. You can still catch salmon in there. You know, theoretically, aren't as many of them are today as there were, but and you could still find, you know, really nice big game animals in there. But anyways, cool spot, really interesting history, and kind of like bring it back home. Like, we just really want to tell the story of that place and tell the story of Frank Church as well, and kind of what he did to sort of protect that place. And I'll tell you, man, like the feedback we've gotten so far has been like really, it's just been really good, man. A lot of people sort of, I feel like, came away with that take home.
Yeah. Dude, you had mentioned a while, like a few minutes ago, that It wasn't you were hoping that viewers remembered the landscape and not like the animals that you guys took home. And it's funny, as you were saying that, I was like, I had the thought right before you said it, but I'm like, I don't really remember the deer that they took home. I was like, I just have these images of the landscape and the ruggedness and the Frank Church. And then you said like, that wasn't the point to remember the deer that you took home. It was the point to showcase this great place. And I was like, nailed it. Like, at least for me, I'm like, yeah, cause I couldn't tell. I'm like trying to remember back in my brain, like, okay, now I remember what they were, but I just remember these images of just these incredible landscapes. And I mean, it sounds like you did it. You met the goal.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. And you'll say like one last thing too about it. Like, for me living in Idaho, and it's easy for me to, relatively easy for me to go like on some big wilderness adventure out my back door. For a lot of folks who maybe don't have as, you know, maybe in the Midwest or the East Coast, who don't have as readily available access to places like that, like doing a trip like that's a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Much bigger deal, a lot more like bigger time commitment. But, and I, you know, I've talked to folks who are like, man, I'd like to do that, you know, or I kind of like to, but I just don't have any, you know, not sure if I can pull it off. And I'll tell you, man, like after that, like I've talked to a lot of people about just like, just do it, man. Just go find your own adventure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to enjoy yourself. You're not going to regret going once you're there. And just like, that's one of the most rewarding parts is it. Just like helping people, like some folks that were inspired to like, you know, use, like watch the film, that were inspired to like go find their own adventure.
Yeah.
I love that, man. It's like that for me is rewarding, right? Because people are like watching our film. They're like, they're going to go do their own trip and you know, they're creating their own memories. And so just, that for me, I didn't expect that, but that's been like one of some of the feedback that's been most rewarding is just folks that are wanting to go do it themselves.
Well, so for those folks that you'd also mention, you're like, I love it when I can hear a wolf howling. And for some people, you're like, they're like, that is literally my worst nightmare. So for these people that are like, if you look, and I keep hearing it, one day I want to visit the Frank Church, but I keep hearing about the Frank Church being this, like, you better bring your A game type of thing. Like, it's people fly into this thing. I mean, it's legit wilderness. You better know what you're doing. And someone out there is listening and being like, that is not me. I don't really know what I'm doing. I would like to know what I'm doing, but I don't right now. And I would imagine there was a time in your life when the Frank Church was, and maybe not, maybe you're just grown, like you just grew up being like Jeremiah Johnson, but there had to have been a time in your life at some point where you were like, that seems impossible. I'm not floating and hunting and shooting a film. And then you did. So, I guess, what's been your path so that we can kind of normalize this for some people? Be like, here's Brad at this time, and here's Brad at this time. There's a lot that happened in between.
Oh, man. Yeah. God. Years of trial by fire, right? Like, the first time I went backpacking in the Frank, and with my a good friend of mine, it was like the formative years of my backpack hunting. I was, I don't know, maybe like 20 or 22, can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. And I just like decided I was going to start backpack hunting. And I had backpacked them a few times for sure. I mean, I should say, I backpacked, you know, a handful of times, you know, when I was in my teenage years, but I didn't grow up in like a backpacking family. Mm-hmm. Backpack hunting was just a way for me to get away from people, which I just wanted to get away from other hunters. But I didn't have like the equipment. I didn't like have all the money to buy the equipment. I mean, so I can remember going into the Frank Church from the trailhead. We walked 3 miles downhill with really heavy packs. My buddy brought in 3 cans of Campbell's soup, for his dinners. Like, no joke. I had like an old hand-me-down MSR Whisper Light stove mm-hmm. that, It was so old. The fuel line clogged the first day we were there, and I couldn't get it to work. And so to heat water. I mean, it was just like classic, like Gumby trip. did not shoot anything. We were wearing probably I was probably wearing denim jeans. I don't even know, man. But and you just kind of have those experiences, and then it's like, you know, you get done with that and you're like, God damn, that was miserable. Mm-hmm. Like I need to get a lighter, you know, sleeping bag. And then I, you know, worked to do that. And then, and it was like experiences like that where I just like, I had them, I, you know, had some level of misery, but I paid attention and tried to learn like what I can do, you know, better and different. Mm-hmm. And I've just I've been fortunate enough to just spend a lot of time outside. Right. So just kind of learn by doing, I guess, I don't think that's the, I mean, part of, again, let me also say to you, man, like part of what we want to do is starting our Golly, because we do have like a whole like content, written content side of our website, and we have a store. I mean, part of that was trying to help shorten that learning curve for people. Yeah, so yeah. Everybody doesn't have to spend, you know, 15 years of their life being miserable and like learning one trip at a time. Like, you know, how do you get your gear dialed in? How do you get how do you, you know, all that stuff. So I'd say it's like, you know, a lot of time in the outdoors. And also, you know, this isn't the first film we've made. So we've had some experience on, you know, how many batteries do you bring in the backcountry? How do you charge batteries in the backcountry? How do you get good audio? How do you get the shots you want, you know, planning ahead, all that stuff. If anybody, like, there's like a difference between going into the Frank or going on some backcountry adventure and then going on that same trip and trying to film it. And I would say you add the filming part of it, and it's like, it makes things more complex by like, you know, times 10. Yeah, it's just like, it adds just a whole new level of difficulty and complexity to everything. You know, finding animals is one thing, finding them, getting the shots you want on camera, while trying to also like do a normal hunt is challenging, but it's something you kind of learn over time.
I have newfound appreciation for folks like yourself that can put something together and do it really well, because I'm just now kind of diving into the, how can I film this thing that I'm doing? I mean, I just backpacked. Yeah, the first time I did it was I backpacked around Mount St. Helens and I was trying to film myself, and I'm like, this is irritating. Like, this is really freaking hard to do, and I'm not even hunting. And then I'm trying, like this season, trying to film some stuff hunting, and I'm like, I am just botching this entire thing.
No, it's hard, man. It's definitely a challenge, a filming piece of it. But on the wolf thing too, though, man, I guess like my general way I approach the woods is like, the things you encounter in the woods, like they don't want to mess with you. Like, they're not out there. They don't see humans, and they're not like, man, I want to kill that human or go, you know, attack them. Mm-hmm. Most things just want to get away from you.
Yeah.
And wolves in particular, I've spent enough time around them where they're real curious animals. But you know, wolf attacks are incredibly low in the world. Very, very rare situation. And, I just do not view them as a threat whatsoever. Grizzly bears are a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But for wolves, it's just like, they're just not a threat to humans.
Well, because everyone,
whatsoever.
It's so funny. I'll take people backpacking for the first time, or even not for the first time, and they're still worried. And everyone thinks that there's going to be a bear, cougar, or a wolf that doesn't exist rip the face off like around us every single corner. And
yeah,
and they're like, should we hang our food bag? And I'm like, if you want to hang the food bag, if that makes you feel really good inside, you can hang it. Like, I know if I'm in an area that I don't need to hang a food bag, I'm probably not going to hang the food bag.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's situational dependent, right? And it cracks me up. It doesn't crack me up. I guess it kind of does make me giggle a little bit. But the point is that everyone's at a different spot. So everyone thinks something different. And the only way to get through that, and you mentioned that one of the points of our golly was to help shorten the learning curve so that someone new wanting to do this kind of stuff wouldn't have to go through your years of trial and error to get to the point where you're at, and they can shorten it, not minimize it, but like shorten it to where they can go out with the confidence knowing like, cool, Brad put this together based on these years of experience. Look at the kind of stuff he does. Here's his suggestions. Here's his thoughts. Cool. Noted. Now I need to go and take that and apply it and figure it out for myself and kind of diverge from there. Right.
Yeah, exactly, man. And the key there, what you just said, is like apply it, but learn, you know, take what I've say, which is not gospel. There's a million different ways to do things. And I just, you know, I have a set of experiences that is my own, but by no means do I think that the way we do things is the only way or the right way.
I think that's key, man. I think that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I generally want people like, so I care about wild places, and I think I know that for the future of having, you know, if we want to have wild places in the future, there need to be people that care about them other than me, right? There needs to be a political constituency for them. And I genuinely think that they're special. And once you have like a wilderness type experience, it can be transformative for you, but you need to have that experience and have it be like semi-enjoyable for you to be like, yeah, I enjoyed that enough to where like, I get it.
Yep.
So if we can help people have those experiences where it's not just complete misery, then I feel like we're also sustaining the future of those places. So it's a sort of like self-fulfilling thing. So yeah, like, it, you know, when it comes to like the content we create on our site or, you know, the gear we sell, like the idea is that we only like sell products that we would use based on experience. And we only like, you know, write content that hopefully helps people and make videos to help people. But all of that is sort of done in the vein of like helping people have more enjoyable experiences. So you don't have, you know, your one big trip be just an absolute misery fest.
I wanted to touch on the topic of, so you bring up a really good point about the more people that get out in there and have a good experience in these wild places, like wilderness areas. And I guess this is kind of, we're literally talking about wilderness areas, that are untouched by, they're left untouched essentially. Like, like, and I guess there's different levels of wilderness areas. Like, I didn't know that. Yeah. I learned that recently. Like, some wilderness areas allow this, some don't allow, like some allow that. And there's different levels of them, I guess. You're probably more aware than I am.
Yeah. Yep.
So since we're talking about wilderness areas, you kind of, you brought up that the more people we can get out there to experience these truly wild places, then the more passionate they're going to become, because there's something that comes from these experiences. As long as it was a good one and they didn't get attacked by a grizzly bear, they're probably going to want to be like, wow, that was truly incredible. And I had one experience when I hiked the PCT. You would go from like, sometimes you're in wilderness areas, but you would always drop into a spot that was populated or sparsely populated or wild, right? And you're always constantly coming in and out of these places. And it was kind of a mind trip that one night you would be completely remote, and then the next night you would be in a very popular area. And I remember having these thoughts of like, when I was in the populated area, I kept thinking to myself, these people, I hope that they know what else is out there. I hope that they know that this is not, Crater Lake National Park is not the end all be all place for wild experiences. And to me, when I was experiencing a place like Crater Lake, yes, it is beautiful, but I'm like, man, all I kept thinking of was, this place must have been amazing when there was nothing here.
And it kind of
made me sad at one point. I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of this pretty place so I can go and experience a more wild place. And my question for you, I guess, Longtail, is after experiencing a place like the Frank, What is it like going to a place like a national park where, let's say Yellowstone, beautiful, beautiful place, but what is it like going from a place like the Frank to like a Yellowstone area?
Oh man, you're like, yeah. So it's a really good question. So let me just preface it by saying, like, I'm very aware that like the type of thing that I enjoy, like big wilderness areas, is not wilderness. Let me back up. Wilderness is a relative concept. So
Sure, yeah.
I'm going to use congressionally designated wilderness is like a defined, legislatively defined thing. But for many people, their wilderness experience, like if you're in, I don't know, I'm just going to pick a state, like Tennessee, or you're in Michigan, like you could have a 2,000 acre parcel of state land that to you, that's wilderness. And I'm not going to disagree with somebody on that, man. If that's your wilderness, I'm stoked for you. And I think that's great. So it's just different for everybody. And I don't want to make it seem like the only, wilderness that matters are these gigantic places, because frankly, there aren't many. We don't have many down here. My point in saying that is like it's important for everybody to find their own wilderness and figure out, how what that means to them. And it doesn't have to be. I just don't want to tell people that, wilderness is only where I think it is. It's
Right, yeah.
that's up for everybody else to decide. For me, man, like Yellowstone is. I might as well be in like Disneyland. It's just the same level of kind of anxiety for me, and it's just a very it's there are some very wild places in Yellowstone. But it's a very different experience. And it's a good one. I'm glad people can go to parks. I do, let me just say this, man. Like, I will say that the thing about Yellowstone that concerns me is it creates this like false sense of our relationship with nature and wildlife. Where it's like this, like it's just like a theme park. Like, oh yeah, there's buffalo and, and it's almost like we're not a part of the ecosystem, we're observing it. And the thing about hunting is like you're a participant in the ecosystem. You are killing life to eat life to sustain yourself, right? That's the way it has been forever for humans. And the thing that we've done with parks is say we're not going to kill animals here, and in fact we can watch other animals kill other animals in a place like Yellowstone, but we're not a part of that life cycle.
That's very
And
strange.
it is strange, and it skews, like I said, again, the thing that concerns me is like it skews people's perception of what our role in the ecosystem is. And people forget that we are animals too, and we have eaten animals our entire existence as a species. So I like it's like this duality on the value of parks, where on the one hand, I'm glad they exist. They're beautiful. They give people that may not have a lot of exposure to nature and wild places like an experience that they'll take home with them. On the other hand, that experience might lead them to think that wildlife, exists in these theme parks, instead of like existing in these less this less manicured experience like they do in like the Frank Church Wilderness. And that we are a part of those ecosystems outside of parks in a way that we are not inside the parks.
That's really weird. When you brought up, we can go like the non everyone. I mean, no one knows. I mean, you can't hunt in a national park, but if a population is overdone or there's a problem with something in the park, then someone else does the hunting or the killing. At that point,
Right.
it's killing. Like, it's not. You're not really hunting. It's like getting rid of a species or a number of species because hunting's not allowed in a park. And I'm sure this is a topic that could probably go on for like hours. Like the oddity of that. Like, you can just kind of feel it. Like, you, I would, yeah, we could probably talk about it forever. And just to try and understand it and not debate it, but just like wrap your brain around it. I don't know where I was going with this, but oh, you had mentioned
Well,
like
you had
we
asked
can,
me what it was like.
yeah. Well, I you'd mentioned. We can't participate in the hunting, but we can, as humans, but we can watch a wolf in Yellowstone take down an elk calf.
mm-hmm.
and applaud it and say, wow, look at that right. circle of life. But then
right.
we can't, like, the law says you cannot allow humans to then take part of the life cycle of a national park.
Right.
It's so weird.
Right, which is, it is like, you know, you think about it and you're like, what's different about the elk in Yellowstone versus outside of Yellowstone? And it part of me is like, it's okay. And so long as, like, I guess just like part of me is just like wants folks that visit there to understand that, like, we kill, you know, it's like Joe Rogan says, life kills life. We kill mm-hmm. life too. Mm-hmm. Either consciously and intentionally or unconsciously and unintentionally. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. If you order, you know, the chicken at your restaurant, or you go to, you know, Arby's or whatever restaurant, you order meat, you are killing life. And I just want people to, like, this is like my philosophical musings. I just want people to understand that, like, what they're experiencing is, one way that a place can exist, but it's also, we've kind of separated ourselves from mm-hmm. That landscape in a way that's just kind of strange. And I don't want it to sound like I don't like parks or don't value them, because I do have a place, yeah. but it's a strange thing that we've created, especially with Yellowstone.
And as a kid, like you said, we're not saying, because I'm on the same page. There's no downplay in the parks. It's just
no
different. And I remember as a kid, we went to Yellowstone and we traveled around, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is legit, you know? And then as you get older and you have these other experiences, in this one moment when I went from a wilder place to dropping down into Crater Lake National Park, and I was like, this is so weird. Like, I've been on the trail for 4 months. This is so weird. Like, you guys don't know what's around the corner. Like, I'm about to go off for another week and go backpacking and cover 100 miles. And I'm just watching everyone have these, like, pseudo outdoor experiences. And I'm like, I guess on one hand, you're like, everyone has to start somewhere. And this is amazing. I am so happy that you're out here. But then they're also walking next door to get a beer and get a steak at the restaurant that's 5 steps away from their RV, that I'm like, man, there's so many different categories of outdoor experiences. And once you've experienced the Frank type of situation, it's hard to have an experience like Yellowstone or Crater Lake or wherever else you have a national park, or that's...
Yeah, you almost like burn off the veneer in a way that's it's unfortunate too, right? Because again, I don't think there's a right or wrong way to experience, you know, the outside, and everybody's got their own way to do it, and I think that's great. You know, however you get outside, I think it's important to get outside. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, it's just interesting to think about. And again, like, just coming back to, like, why the wild places matter. It's like, it's a subset of experiencing the outside in a way that's just, it's kind of hard to find anymore. And places like the Frank sort of epitomize that experience. And even if, you know, it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people probably look at what, and I've heard this from people. It's like, man, I'm never going to do that. It's just too, like, I don't want to be that miserable. It's mm-hmm. cold. It's like, I get it. And I don't blame you. In fact, you're probably smarter than we are. but it exists for those that want to. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, just knowing that it exists is like all they want. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that, man. It's like, people are honest enough to be like, I don't want to do that, but I like that it's there so that other people can do it. Mm-hmm. Great. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and I will say, I don't know if you want to talk about, like, kind of what we have planned for the future.
Yeah, man.
Film series, but we have
I'd be stoked. I really enjoyed... I like the concept of what you're doing with showcasing these wild places. So yeah, if you want to kind of lay down the roadmap of what you might have.
It's kind of just related, like, because I feel like we've been talking about Frank, but some of the other projects we have in the works, and I can't say like too much about the specifics just quite yet, but we are going to focus on places that aren't quite as big, but are still important and wild and remote.
Right. Yep.
in a much different way in the lower 48. So I've got, yeah, really excited. The reception's been good to this film. And we did another film in Wyoming last year that sort of will be the, should be the second installment in this Last Wild Places series. And then we've got one planned for this coming year that I'm really excited about, sort of, telling a cool story in a desert landscape. It's totally different than what we did in the Frank, but also just a really neat, interesting story.
Yeah.
So we're
I would imagine that people are going to be like, well, dude, the Frank, I mean, the Frank is like kind of, it's like the top. It's like one of those.
Right.
Great. You didn't work out. You started at the top. Now you're going to work down. People are going to be like, well, I'm not going to the Frank. And you're like, okay, I like the idea of like showcasing various other places that you're like, okay, I know you don't have to go to the Frank. And yes, it's kind of a crazy place, but check it out. There's these other places that you might not know about, or you do know about, but this is what they're like. And that's super cool. That are more attainable, I guess, for some people.
Yeah. Yeah. The Frank is an aspirational trip, right? It's something that I can do frequently because I'm close to it. And, but yeah, I think for most people, it's not the kind of trip they're going to do every year, and that's, or ever maybe, but there are a lot more attainable places that I would still say, I still think fit into this vein of showcasing these wild places that we have, and then just telling a story about that place the same way we did in the Frank. So, So I don't think, so this next one, we're not going to be in actually designated wilderness area. Mm-hmm. It's a wild landscape that, you know, it's great because you can backpack in it or not. Mm-hmm. You can day hike in it. It's cool country. Just a very different place, but it still has that, it's a wild place for its own, mm-hmm. for its own reasons. But yeah, we did kind of start at the top, man. I feel like everything is going to be not quite as extreme, which is good.
Oh man, that's funny. I talked to this guy, he wrote a book. He spent like a ton of time on have you heard of the Gate of, I think it's called Gates of the Arctic National Park?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was describing mm-hmm. that thing, and I'm like, this thing, he's like, it's the black belt of national parks. And I was like, that's what he called it. He's like, it's known as like, if you're a park ranger, like we're kind of like downplaying national parks here a second ago, but then you talk to this guy and he's like, no, it's legitimately like the black belt of national parks. Like if you're a ranger, you don't get stationed there unless you're like a badass. And he was the guy that would take rangers in and be like, let me show you this park. Cause it is legit wilderness. It's like a national park, how you and I would probably want a national park to be like.
Yeah. And I should say, yeah, too, like Alaska. So like all parks are different, right? But mm-hmm. Alaska parks are interesting because you actually can't hunt some of the parks up in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And the scale is just monstrous, mm-hmm. man. It's like parks the size of bigger than some states, you know, they're
so
huge,
crazy.
Huge parks.
Oh, thank God we have Alaska.
It's just like, I know, like the scale in Alaska is just, it's really hard to wrap your head around. Mm-hmm. Which is why, I mean, I'm glad it exists, but it's just like, it's much different situation mm-hmm. up there. It's like a different world. We talk about all these things.
I have one last big question for you, and I hadn't really thought about it until we kind of were on this. And I was thinking, you know how everyone's like, do you think the founding fathers of America what would they think of the nation today? So along that same concept, but you take like a guy like Teddy Roosevelt that started the whole national parks thing, right? So mm-hmm. take that same kind of question. If you were to resurrect old Teddy from the grave and talk to him about the idea of preserving wild places and kind of showcase what we've done since his time on Earth was concluded, what do you think he would think? Do you think that we were getting it right? Or do you think that he would adjust some stuff?
Oh, wow.
And I've never thought about this question ever. So it's kind of, it's new to me, but I'm not a Teddy like history buff, but it would be it's an interesting question to kind of, what do you think he would say?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, part of me is like, that's a pretty tough question, impossible question to answer. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you look at what Roosevelt And again, I'm not a like total,
right?
I wouldn't consider myself
we're not
a
historian,
but I would say, like, you know what, like, he, so I'll just give you my like opinion, which is not based on like fact or anything else having to do with reality. But I think of Roosevelt as someone that really led the way in recognizing the value in protecting places. He was a hunter, right? Mm-hmm. He, his sort of connection to nature was forged by hunting. And he understood that connection to place through the lens of hunting. You know, I, and Yellowstone at the time, like, I totally get why he did what he did with Yellowstone. I mean, we were, market hunting was quickly eliminating a lot of wildlife species across the country. And if it had it not been for places like Yellowstone, we probably wouldn't have, you know, bison today. Mm-hmm. So it made sense at the time. I think someone like Roosevelt, if he were to just like reappear all of a sudden and go into like Yellowstone, he would probably, a lot of things would probably surprise him, but, yeah, I don't know. I think he would probably have, you know, conflicting emotions about it and feelings about it.
That's kind of where I land on it. I bet he would be really, I would imagine he'd be like, wow, I'm really glad this stuff is around and you guys have expanded it, but I wish that it may not have been so commercialized.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's hard, man. I knew, so it's funny. So like just relating back to the Frank, so I didn't know Frank Church. He died before I was born, but I did know his widow, Bethine, and had the who was an absolute firecracker. And, you know, most people who knew Frank when he was a senator knew Bethine because she was essentially, she was, the joke in Idaho was that she wasn't elected, but she was essentially the senator. You know, she was very involved in what Frank did and very involved in every decision and vote he made, and sharp as a tack. And, you know, she and Frank were, they were just these really Idaho, you know, Idaho born classic, classic Idaho, the traditional Idaho folks, where they had this appreciation for sort of the outdoors in Idaho, down to earth, kind, and very sort of moderate and understanding and pragmatic when it came to all political issues. Hmm. So yeah, and I, you know, so even thinking about what would Frank Church think about, you know, mm-hmm. the wilderness that was posthumously named after him. Because it was only named after him after he passed away. It was Central Idaho Wilderness before that. And I gotta say, man, I think that a lot of the things that he put in that bill, like it just hasn't changed that much. Like, there hasn't, unlike some like the things we're talking about, Yellowstone, like the Frank Church Wilderness just has not changed that much. It really hasn't been that commercialized.
That's cool.
It's just because there's really no easy way to access it. So there probably are more people today using it, undoubtedly. But even that is still relatively low just because it is not easy to get into or out of. So, but yeah.
That's good. That's good to hear. I mean, yeah, there's tons of wilderness places. Like you said, there's the government designated wilderness, and then there's individual people's wilderness and different levels of it. And I think that's what's great about it. They're like stepping stone wildernesses. If you want one that's easily accessible, you got it. If you want something that's really remote, you got that too. And I think that's the beautiful thing about, I guess, what Roosevelt started and Frank Church carried on and all those different people. I think it's incredible.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, dude, what is the, I guess to wrap up, what's the, if people want to reach out to you and find your things, what's the easiest way for people to find you?
Two ways. Instagram, our Argali Instagram is at @Argali_official. That's usually a good way to reach out, or my email's on our website. You can go to argalioutdoors.com and find my email, and people can reach out there. Those are kind of the two best ways.
Well, I will make sure those links are in the show notes so that people can scroll down and click and find you guys. Man, Brad, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate the chat and kind of picking your brain about a bunch of different stuff.
No, it's been fun, man. I'm just like bracing myself for angry calls from the National Park Service. But other than that, this has been a fun conversation, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right, that is it for episode 60 with Brad Brooks of Our Galley Outdoors. Thank you so much for joining me, and special thanks to Brad for coming on and sharing his thoughts and his stories with us. If you like what you heard, please hit him up, find him on the web or Instagram. Links are in the description. And if you haven't already contacted me to say hi, introduce yourself, let me know who you are and where you're from, I would love that. I would love to hear from you guys. And if you have any suggestions for things you'd like to hear in the podcast, I'm open to that as well. So please reach out to me. You can find me at byland.co or email me at Emory, E-M-O-R-Y, at byland.co. That would be great. This is the first week and weekend of 2019, so be safe if you're headed out. Make good decisions, and we'll see you next time.